What's ailing America and the world? And our answer today is medical assault on the immune system by bioweapon vaccines with my special guest, Dr. Vera Scheibner. And that song that was just playing, Dr. Scheibner, is one of my favorite songs of all time, Say No to the Vaccine, by NZ Trillion. You can see it on YouTube. And that song in itself is waking up a lot of people. But I'm glad you were talking about the fact that, yes, it's true that even having these cot watch monitors would not really help parents of today, because the children are so damaged. The demyelination is so massive. I speak about it as basically liquefaction of the white matter of the brain. In other words, it's turning to mush. So, you know, basically once that's happening, there's nothing you can do. The baby's already dead. And this is, of course, very disgusting that this is occurring. And I also just want to mention that I have been a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases in many different cases here in the States. And in my experience, the vaccinator always wins. Usually I testify in a custody situation where one parent is saying the other parent is negligent because they're not vaccinating the children, even if initially they felt the same way. But their attorneys obviously tell them, you know, say that your spouse is medically negligent for not vaccinating and you will win custody. And that's always the way it goes. The vaccinator always wins. And that's how you know that the governments are totally involved in these situations. That's intentional. And interestingly, attorneys that work for the non-vaccinator always sell out their clients as well. Basically, they would never bring up information from somebody like yourself or myself. There are quite a few others who know what's going on, and they basically, you know, just neglect that. And so the poor child ends up, you know, going to the custody of the one who is willing to vaccinate just to get custody. And that's how it works. And this is very disgusting, in my opinion. Go ahead.
Well, I am referring to the ad about the flu vaccine and flu season. And I will read to you from Australian Doctor. It is the 5th of April, 2013. Compulsory flu vax for doctors banned. How doctors don't want the flu vaccine themselves. Doctors should not be forced to have the flu shot until there is a better vaccine available, infectious disease experts have argued. Writing last week in the Journal of Canadian Medical Association, doctors Gardam and Lenieux said it was of paramount importance that the influenza vaccination be critically analyzed before making it mandatory for healthcare workers. And one doctor commented, "I am uncomfortable with doctors looking grossly hypocritical by saying children should be vaccinated, and maybe they themselves should not be." Then another commented, "There seems very thin evidence for mandating widespread immunization. If this drug didn't have vaccine written on it, we would demand it be returned to the lab to be improved and insist on good quality independent research into its use." So doctors are pushing vaccines onto children, but don't want them for themselves. And so this is another very worrying trend, the hypocrisy and sort of two-sidedness of the medical profession.
Exactly. I'm sorry, there's the music break again. And yes, I get doctors and mostly nurses that call me and say, what can they do to stop getting vaccinated because they're being threatened to lose their job? And the first question I always ask them is, do you vaccinate patients that see you? And they always say yes. And I totally agree with you. This is hypocrisy with a capital H. We'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned. Today my special guest is Vera Scheibner, PhD from Australia. And one thing I just want to mention, Dr. Scheibner, that I always try to you know, tell people to contact me just to get them to wake up, you know, in the beginning stages, is that if a germ is bad, the idea that inoculating it directly into your bloodstream is going to protect you, that is the ultimate in insanity. And in my opinion, as in terms of the medical profession, this is the biggest lie that has ever been told. And in fact, vaccine-induced diseases are the biggest epidemic the world has ever known. And it is critical because it's not just the vaccine-induced diseases. Of course, it's the genetic mutations that are created as well. In my paper, Inoculations, A True Weapon to Mass Destruction, I have a reference to a 1999 Scientific American article where they talk about DNA vaccines. Now, in that article, of course, they're trying to convince people that they can use DNA vaccines to correct the mutations in DNA that are present in people. But in fact, when you just look at the diagrams and they show how the plasmid of DNA or RNA injected into the person actually incorporates itself into the very genetic structure, it's obvious to anybody with eyes to see that that's what's causing the mutations in most cases from the beginning. And so the damage, I mean, this is going to potentially cause the extinction of the human race. And that's how important this is. And I'm so grateful to you for all the work that you've done. I just want to mention something in your book, Vaccination, 100 Years of Orthodox Research, shows that vaccines represent a medical assault on the immune system. My favorite chapter in your book is Chapter 11, entitled Adverse Effects of Vaccines Validate Homeopathy, which blew my mind because, in fact, you're totally correct in everything you write in this chapter. And should we be surprised that actually in California now, they're trying to, make a law that basically homeopathy is quackery and, that it should not be allowed to be given to people, blah, blah, blah. So this is a very important part of your research that people should read as well. Of course, I never even heard the word homeopathy when I was in medical school. I actually cured myself of endometriosis and a non-union fracture by using homeopathy when somebody I knew told me to go to a naturopath. And I realized immediately after I was cured that that's why I never heard the word medical school, because these little $6 vials of sugar pills had cured me. And I didn't need the open reduction of my foot where they were going to put pins and plates to create an alleged healing of this bone that was not healing because the idiot orthopedic surgeon had put a cast on my foot that actually stopped above the fracture, so I walked on the fracture for 6 weeks. But my point is that, in my opinion, this is probably one of the most important chapters in your book, because the way that you have discussed how, as I said, adverse effects of vaccines validate homeopathy, no surprise that Big Pharma is so scared of homeopathy that it will actually heal people, because there's not a lot of money to be made in healing people. They would rather create disease and give their drugs, which cure nothing but cause side effects. So I thank you so much for putting that together, because that is critical. Go ahead.
Well, yes, I am not a homeopath, but I only know the principles of homeopathy. And there is a discussion time and again, which flares up and dies down, etc., when the Orthodox medical doctors, some of them are very active in this attempt, trying to outlaw alternative medicine, and particularly homeopathy. Recently, there was a discussion about that in Australia, but I must say that other medical doctors pitched in and denounced such undemocratic and intolerant attempts of some medical doctors to outlaw medicine that is effective, because alternative medicine is more effective than orthodox medicine. As you said, orthodox medications are causing the disease. From homeopathic perspective, all orthodox medications are actually provings, meaning they cause the disease. Exactly. And the discussion died down. The problem is that people allow themselves to be intimidated. Here in Australia, these so-called friends of science in medicine, who were actually its enemies, they were intimidating universities and wanted them to stop giving courses of homeopathy. So it is, again, a very Nazi, Hitler-style attempt against democracy and against the freedoms, basic freedoms. So that's one thing. But I would not forgive myself if I did not address during this interview what vaccines actually do. They actually suppress the immune system. They de-immunize. They do not immunize. Using the word immunize in connection with vaccines is illegal. It is not reflecting the truth, and people should not believe that. Right from the beginning of vaccination, which was smallpox, it became obvious that the vaccine, the smallpox vaccine, actually caused smallpox, that the biggest epidemics were in areas with the highest vaccination compliance, and in the city of Leicester, in the United Kingdom, in England, when people boycotted vaccination, then smallpox stopped occurring. The same happened with polio, and I have to address this because this smallpox and polio so-called eradication is the only success that vaccinators actually claim. But the truth is that polio vaccine is actually causing polio, and also other vaccines cause paralysis. Initially, polio was called a provocation paralysis provoked by injections of other vaccines. This is all documented in medical literature. And you mentioned developing countries. Well, they often trial vaccines on those malnourished children in developing countries. But I have to read to you, this is published in The Lancet, what happened in Namibia. Et al., 1994, The Lancet wrote, in late 1993, a poliomyelitis epidemic occurred almost exclusively in residents of the South Hells region, the area that was highly vaccinated. We speculate, therefore, that endemic wild poliovirus circulation continued uninterrupted in Angola and the two north regions of Namibia across the well-traveled border since 1989, when cases were last reported. And now, listen carefully. Although OPV, meaning oral polio vaccine, coverage was fairly low in northern compared with southern Namibia, a higher proportion of northern children may have been protected at least to type 1 by natural immunity, thus suppressing epidemics. In 1993, OPV3, meaning three doses, coverage among infants aged less than 1 year was higher in the south than the north. However, evidence suggests that a substantial pool of susceptibles, especially among children 1 to 3 years, was created when vaccine coverage was low and the apparent interruption of wild poliovirus circulation limited the acquisition of natural immunity. So they are actually saying that vaccination limited the acquisition of natural immunity, and that when they did not vaccinate, children developed immunity, solid immunity to polio without developing paralysis. Now, admissions of this kind are very significant because I call it a cry for help. Probably the researchers tried to sneak in the truth in their article and did it this way. Another thing is that we have outbreaks of whooping cough, particularly, or they are highlighted anyway, and measles, in very young children. So babies before the vaccination age. Now, how does this happen? Well, when you read medical literature, as I do, you will realize that actually these babies contracted whooping cough from their fully vaccinated mothers and siblings who nevertheless suffered whooping cough at the time of their birth. And because they were born to mothers who were vaccinated, they have no transplacentally transmitted immunity, which normally protects small babies up to 2 years of age against any infectious disease, because there is an optimal age for acquiring natural diseases. And so those babies are actually victims of vaccination because they were robbed of transplacentally transmitted immunity. And often when they die, they actually did not die from whooping cough, they died from antibiotics. It is particularly significant in one article published in Australia, where they claim that four babies died from whooping cough, while in fact they started deteriorating. They were not even ill. They were not. They had no temperature. They were eating properly until they were put on intravenous antibiotics, started deteriorating straight away and died. So they died from antibiotics. I am old enough to remember that when antibiotics were introduced in mass proportions in the late 1950s, people were dropping dead from penicillin injections. And it is well described in medical papers who admitted clearly that this penicillin and then later other antibiotics were killing people, but it doesn't filter into the media. So, or it is misrepresented, as in this case of allegedly whooping cough killing small babies. Another thing is to remember, when they talk about any epidemic, like now they started again in the epidemic of measles in the United Kingdom, don't forget, it all occurs in the fully vaccinated children. It is exactly. The vaccinated children who spread diseases. They get them and spread diseases, and they often get them in an atypical form, and they claim that it was only the first measles vaccine that causes caused atypical measles. That's not true, because when they...
Okay, we're going to a break. Hold on. We'll pick it up there. And we're back with What's Ailing America and the World, and my special guest is Dr. Vera Scheibner from Australia. This is such an important show, folks. Please send this archive to everybody you know. This will really help to wake up parents. And I just want to let you know, Dr. Scheibner, that, of course, one of the ways that medical students are basically brainwashed and propagandized into believing all the crap that they're taught is through sleep deprivation and nutritional deprivation and other things. But after I, caught up on my sleep after about 5 years, after I, left surgery, I went back through some of my medical books, and in fact, in Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, 6th edition, page 975. Now, this is the book that's used to train doctors all over the world in this entity called internal medicine, which is actually vaccine-induced disease. It actually states, and I quote, in regards to the poliomyelitis vaccine, that vaccine virus multiplies in the intestinal tract of vaccinated individuals. This type of immunization in the presence of epidemic poliomyelitis may lead to replacement of the wild strain by the one in the vaccine. When I read that, it just blew my mind. They're basically telling us that the vaccine virus is actually worse. And in fact, it's self-evident that that's the case. And the idea that they're spreading, and of course we can thank Bill Gates in large part for this, as he pretends that he's, a philanthropist and he wants to, help people in the world. He's largely behind these vaccine assaults in third world countries. And the idea that you could have children who are eating dirt cakes, okay, talk about malnutrition. They're eating dirt cakes, and then you're going to bring in the missionaries who are going to pretend that they're there to help you. And what do they have? They got a syringe with a vaccine in it. It is so evil, it just defies comprehension. Go ahead.
Well, in India, for instance, recently there have been scandal after scandal because as they were vaccinating children with polio vaccines, the children were developing paralysis and were dying. They are sort of reasoning, if that can be called reason, that they eradicated poliomyelitis, natural poliomyelitis, but all cases of paralysis now are caused by vaccines. It's vaccines caused paralytic poliomyelitis. They admit it. And it is absolutely beyond comprehension that they would consider it a success. I mean, what does it matter to parents whose children became paralyzed, whether it was from the natural disease or from polio vaccine? Actually, it does matter, because if they don't give their children polio vaccine, they will not get paralysis. They will develop a solid immunity to a natural disease, as they do to all other diseases. Another thing is that they are hyping up even non-existent epidemics, people should be aware that when they come up with an idea that there is an outbreak in of measles in Scotland, it may not be true at all. It's just lies. And they are getting away with it because people believe them. Patients should, and people who go to doctors, they should try to educate doctors and not just accepting any nonsense they are dished out. So another thing is that what I was going to say that, indigenous populations are particularly susceptible to reactions to vaccines because they are malnourished. And in Australia, it was Dr. Archie Kalokerinos, now deceased. Unfortunately, he died in March last year. And he was made aware by another doctor that these Aboriginal children are dying from scurvy. So when he got a dying child to hospital and administered by injection vitamin C, so miraculously, within minutes, a dying child recovered and was sitting up in bed and drinking a bottle. So people should educate themselves, people should read as much as possible, and then simply refuse to be subjected to any of these nasty procedures. Another thing is that not only medical students are sleep-deprived, etc., but they are over-vaccinated. You know, now they make it a condition to attend clinical classes to be given at least hepatitis B vaccine, but lately also DPT and MMR vaccine, etc., all over again, even though most of them were vaccinated as children. And many of them can't even finish the course and become very ill. In the United Kingdom, they published quite recently that there are hundreds of medical doctors who lost their jobs because they are chronic fatigued, and of course they did not link it to those vaccines that they are pushed into them. So people should say no, and because as another medical doctor said, a friend, he said, injecting vaccine is rape, with full penetration and ejaculation.
Wow, I love that. Okay, there's the music. We're starting to get callers. Hold on, we'll be getting to you shortly, folks, after the break. I love that. That is very special. Yes, it is. Rape. By syringe. Wake up, people, and say no. We'll be right back. My guest today is Dr. Greer Scheibner from Australia. We are cooking, and we have callers lining up. I want to get to the callers, but I just want to say a couple of things first. Native peoples are obviously being extinguished with vaccines, as they have ancient wisdom regarding health. And the powers that be certainly don't want people to be healthy, because that's going to not only put Big Pharma out of business, but then they're going to be like Exhibit A in terms of the fact that vaccines are not causing health. And just to let you know, I like to bring things to the ludicrous level in order to wake people up. And one thing I oftentimes say is that if injecting yourself with organisms protects you, then you don't have to go to your white coat. All you have to do is get a syringe, you know, basically go to your toilet and, you know, pull back the syringe and inject that into your bloodstream. And if vaccinations work, then certainly that should be a very effective way of producing immunity. But, of course, I'm being facetious with that. Okay, our first caller, Werner, from British Columbia. I'm sorry, from New Brunswick. Go ahead, Werner. I know you're chomping at the bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Dr. Carly, and good afternoon, Dr. Scheibner. I took a few notes down. When we look at vaccine deaths, I understand the biggest example is the flu epidemic in the First World War.
Yes.
What about it?
Well, the Spanish flu was actually started in the vaccinees. I forget what military base it was started in, but Eleanor McBean talks about that in her excellent book, Vaccinations, a Silent Killer. But yes, they actually start an experiment, and soldiers are used for this all the time, and then they create some monster bug because of the ability of viruses to, you know, transmutate and combine with other viruses and create something, and then they scare people that this was from Spain, which is ridiculous. It started in a military base, and that's how they hoodwinked people into getting the vaccine back in those days. And, of course, that's what caused so many deaths. Go ahead, Warren.
Now, another question. I understand the vaccines are either using the weakened pathogens or killed off pathogens. How can they determine that there are not some tough ones among those pathogens that basically become superbugs?
I
good
can
question.
Answer this.
Go ahead,
I
Dr. Scheibner.
Answer that. Yes. Well, the so-called weaken bacteria and viruses used in vaccines by attenuation or inactivation. But that is an incomplete and reversible process. Because, again, demonstrated by research, when you attenuate or inactivate the virus, within about 40 hours, two-thirds of these viruses and bacteria will be inactivated or attenuated, but then there is a viable residue forever. This is called an asymptotic factor, and it has been well documented already in 1960s.
Then wait, hold on, hold on. Can you spell that? I'm not familiar with that term.
Well, you mean asymptotic factor?
Yeah.
What? Well, it means that that you cannot inactivate or attenuate a virus or bacterium in its entirety. That they will develop immunity to it, you see.
Right.
Bacteria and viruses develop solid immunity to antibiotics, for instance, and to sulfur drugs. So that's why they are so ineffective. But anyway, so then when vaccine research incompletely inactivated or attenuated viruses and bacteria is injected, even those inactivated and attenuated part of this pool revert back to the original virulence. And so not only that, they may be more virulent than they were originally.
Right.
And so then there is also an interaction between viruses and bacteria, interaction, so they combine together and the result is a more virulent strain. They will mutate. They, for instance, when they introduced antibiotics, already in 1959 they published that antibiotics made no inroads into number of and severity of infections, but they simply changed from bacteria from pneumococcus to staphylococcus. And the serious blood poisoning and infections and deaths continued. So antibiotics made absolutely no difference in infections. And vaccines cause the same. For instance, Haemophilus influenzae B. When they started using the vaccine with Haemophilus influenzae B, this Haemophilus changed into untypeable to typeable version. When they started using meningococcus, so the A changed to B, B changed into C. And so there is you cannot eradicate, you cannot kill any microscopic organisms because they are what I call superior intelligence, and they change, accommodate, become immune to anything that we throw at them.
Exactly.
So that's my answer.
And that's because the immune system has been basically immobilized, and it can't do its job. And I just want to say, I had a client who unfortunately the parents didn't call me until it was too late, a 12-year-old who got the HPV vaccine and the hepatitis B vaccine on the same day. Eventually, she went into multi-organ failure, and they diagnosed her with non-A, non-B, non-C, non-D, non-E hepatitis. So now we're up to F. And I'm sure they harvested that virus to play with in the future. So you're totally correct that these viruses have the ability to reconstitute themselves. So the idea of inactivation is ridiculous, and as Werner pointed out so appropriately, that they don't check every vial. How can they say that these viruses are inactivated in the first place? You know, there's no true standard of mandating safety, because that's not the intent of vaccines in the first place. Go ahead.
Well, the prime example is the superbugs that are now in the hospitals.
Yes.
But you see, those superbugs in the hospital, the hospital infections, are not created by some bugs that are jumping continents and arrive on jumbo jets. It is actually created in the bowel of every patient, because it is the standard procedure, at least in Australian hospitals, that on admission, every patient, whether they need it or not, put on antibiotics and given paracetamol, which is a deadly combination, because, again, another medical research documented that when you suppress fever in a person who has some infection, you actually make the bacteria more susceptible to become immune to antibiotics. Because if, for instance, you give antibiotics and let the person to have fever, then even antibiotics would be more effective. So that's, it is so unscientific that it defies description. And so they are creating these superbugs in the gut of every patient.
Exactly. Anything else, Werner?
Well, it's basically like you want to dam a river. Sooner or later, you know, it will overflow unless there is a controlled overflow being allowed. And this is basically, life is a risk. And we have to use due diligence in nutrition and lifestyle in order to keep that risk to a minimum. And there might come something else in. Dr. Wallach, Doctor of Ashes, he did extensive research during his career about the deficiencies. When certain deficiencies, nutrient deficiencies show up, it makes us and any kind of a living thing susceptible to attacks from all kind of diseases. But when the nutritional deficiency is being dealt with and is being remedied, then the body got the material to fight off the disease.
Well, I am 78 years old, and since 1985, I've been taking very large doses of sodium ascorbate, which is a non-acidic form of vitamin C. And I must say that before I started taking these large doses of vitamin C, every 2-3 years I got tonsillitis. And I always thought, I need antibiotics. Until in 1985, I just said to myself, no more antibiotics, only vitamin C. And I never had tonsillitis since. You see, it is actually good for the body to be infected and become immune. We cannot live in a capsule, in a bubble. We live in an atmosphere teeming with life. And we must get infected, and we must get natural immunity. And you were right, Werner. When you your nutritional status, and particularly vitamin C status, is good, you will not even develop a disease and develop immunity without any clinical signs. So it is good to be infected, but we must have good nutritional and vitamin C status for the body to deal with it in a proper and beneficial way.
And as you said, we must allow the immune system to do its job, which includes fever, and that's one of the main frauds that the pediatricians are laying on parents, scaring them. If the temperature of the child goes above 100, we have to give them all kinds of antipyretics, be it, you know, Tylenol or Advil or whatever the case may be, and that's one of the major aspects of the immune system, to get rid of the problem. And so that's another fraud that's being laid upon the parents.
Fever is a healing process and should never be suppressed. And even orthodox medical research says that.
Right.
Okay. Dr. Seitzer, may I say just one more thing? You seem to be an excellent doctor. You have a very open mind, and that is more and more needed. But may I suggest, when you mentioned that about the Nazis and Hitler, those were terrible times, and we all have to do some research. There is now material available on the internet from the original archives. What led to the terrible war? And those that want to depict themselves as the poor innocent victims and who were the judges in Nuremberg, they got a lot to cover up.
Well, that's very interesting that you mention it. First of all, I lived it, you see. I lived through the war. But my mother said that in... let me finish. My mother said that in war there are mainly victims on both sides. Okay? That's one thing, because soldiers don't want to go into the war. They are forced to go into the war. That's the one thing. But I also have to say that during Nazi regime they mandated diphtheria vaccination, which I remember caused huge outbreaks of diphtheria in the recipients of the vaccines, and they stopped it. So even those bad people realized that it was not a good idea and stopped that vaccination.
As I say, Germany was being put in a terrible situation.
But, Berger, this is not the subject of our discussion here, okay?
I know, but I just wanted to say that...
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your call, Werner. We have people lining up. Let's bring on Alex from Canada. Are you there, Alex? Thank you, Werner.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to just add something in about the vaccination of indigenous people. As I'm out with the IGCCS regularly today being another day, we've been out with elders who have survived in residential schools, and they were subject to vaccination programs. And in one case, one of the elders we're working with was vaccinated 36 times in each arm.
Wow.
At the very same time. So I appreciate all you do. I'm making you a card and sending it with your box. And we're going to put that in the mail tomorrow. Sorry it took so long. And,
thank you. You're actually bringing home the point, and I want to say that again, that the indigenous people are being taken out intentionally. As a matter of fact, they're now able to go against specific races of people thanks to the genome project, you know, figuring out the genome of peoples from everywhere, and they can attack certain peoples intentionally with biological weapons nicknamed vaccines. And as I said, that's because they don't want that ancient wisdom out there. These people know about healing. They've been doing it for, you know, centuries. And those are the most important people they want to take out. So that's self-evident, and it's, in, you know, basically anybody that has eyes to see. But thank you very much. We're running out of time so fast. Anything else, Alex?
Well, I'd just like to say thank you for you brave and courageous doctors for your commitment to humanity and to actually stand up for your patients in the public. And I'd like to encourage other people the challenges that they face when they stand up and actually say something and help support the problem. You have to recognize when people do something like this what the consequences they face, and you should help them survive and protect them from that point forward, or you're part of the problem.
Right, and one thing I want to say, which I didn't say before, which I think is very important, anybody that calls me, I always tell them, if they're asking questions about vaccines, I tell especially the mothers, how many weeks or months are you spending getting ready for your baby, making the nursery? How about if you spend a fraction of that time investigating vaccines? Because I can assure you, your baby is going to be much more grateful that you did the investigation into vaccines than, you know, how many, you know, dinosaurs they have on their wallpaper or whatever the case may be. They need to spend their time investigating what's being done to their children.
Well, I agree very much with that, and I say myself to parents, I would tell the parent that, but when I look at children in the shopping centers, how beautifully they are dressed, but coughing their heads off. So right. They are beautifully dressed, and the body is deceased. Thanks.
Exactly. Okay, thanks, Alex. We have so many callers lining up. Bill from Idaho, are you there, Bill? Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to take a break. All right, hold on. We'll bring you on after the break. This time always goes so fast. I could spend an entire day on this interview with Dr. Scheifer. Unfortunately, we only have 2 hours. Okay, Bill, we'll bring you on after the break. Stay tuned, folks. I hope you're getting it. We'll be right back. My special guest today is Dr. Vera Scheifner, expertise on vaccinations. There's very few people that could actually reach her level of knowledge, and I encourage all of you to check out her work. I just want to say that it's so amazing to me how many people just accept the propaganda and go along with it. And, of course, I was one of those people, being sleep-deprived and all the rest of it in medical school and believing the propaganda and vaccination, even though I was watching euthanasia and experimentation on people and research fraud. You know, I had to wake up as I could, because it was very hard for me to face reality when I had done so much time in medical school and all the rest of it. But, you know, once you do the research, it's unquestionable as to what's really going on. They are creating disease. They are giving drugs that cure nothing but cause side effects. And that's what people have to realize. As Dr. Scheifner said, our body has the ability to heal itself. Get out of the way. Eat organic food, drink clean water, you know, breathe good air as best you can as we're being sprayed with chemtrails like we are pests. Do whatever you can in order to maintain your body's integrity, and you will be as healthy as is possible in this world of total corruption and fraud. Okay, let's bring Bill on from Idaho. Are you there, Bill?
Yes, bless you, ma'am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes, I just wanted to thank you both for your ethical, moral stance in regard to this issue. It sounds like a more silent weapons for secret wars, and we all know what that implies. The archived listeners and the listeners of the program, newer ones especially, realize that this station is only here by virtue of good people that can get some money to this station and make sure that it stays on the air. There's a pledge drive, and it's critically needed at this moment. To both of you, there appears to be a consistent drumbeat within the 501c3 churches and an expanding relationship of the medical community in relation to sponsoring these kind of programs. And it would seem worrisome if the NGOs that are so needed in the second and third world countries and have these relationships with these medical companies and or vaccine vendors ultimately cause an environment where the people in the pews are not aware of the damage that they're doing supposedly to their brothers that they're supposed to be trying to help. Is there any information in regard to that particular part of the issue?
Well, let me just say, I live in the Bible Belt here in North Carolina, and there are so many churches having vaccine clinics in the churches. It is mind-boggling, pure evil, and it just shows you that they've totally sold out. So as far as I'm concerned, the NGOs, the 501c churches, all of them have sold out, and that's our problem because you know, they're promoting this insane practice of vaccination. I can't believe how fast the time went, Dr. Scheifner. Excellent show. I thank you so much for joining us today. And listeners, please check out her work. As I said, there will be links to some of her papers on the archives on the lightofdayradioshow.com. Protect yourself with knowledge, because otherwise you are dead. Thank you, Dr. Scheifner. I'm sorry to the listeners we didn't get to. And we'll be back next week with a veteran who knows what's going on, Ken O'Keefe. And that's going to be another very important show. Okay, we'll be back
next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Scheifner. Bye-bye.
Bye.